And one thing that really scared me this launch, it was our 11th launch of Copywriting for Creatives, is offer fatigue. Mm-hmm. I think that is very prevalent, and you've got to figure out a way, whether it's a new hook when you're coming in with the angle of what's going on in the world, or like just thinking outside of the box, I think is very important. You've got to nail that. Offer fatigue is real.
Welcome to the Brandset Book Show, where we help creative service-based businesses build their brands and find more clients. I'm your host, Davey Jones. Today's guest is copywriter Ashlyn Carter. Longtime listeners of the Brandset Book podcast will remember that Ashlyn was one of the very first guests on the podcast. All the way back in episode 2, she talked about how to write high-converting website copy, an episode that's still relevant today and still full of practical tips. So if you haven't listened to it, be sure to check out that episode as well. Ashlyn has written sales copy for some of the biggest names in the creative industry and has earned the reputation of someone who has really honed her craft. In today's episode, we benefit not only from her expertise as a copywriter, but also as a business owner. We cover a range of topics from the importance of emotional hooks to her best tips for writing headlines and what she thinks is coming in the next year. We also get to hear about a fascinating email project that she's been working on. And we just get to catch up. As always, be sure to check out the show notes at davyandkrista.com for the resources we mentioned during the episode. And before we move on, can I ask you a favor? If you enjoy listening to the Brandset Book podcast and find this episode helpful, would you mind heading over to Apple Podcasts and leaving us a review? Reviews are helpful for so many different reasons, but most importantly, they let us know that the kind of content we're producing is the kind of content you want to hear. Now, enough from me, on to the episode. Do you play Settlers of Catan at all?
Is that the one in Parks and Rec? No.
I'm not sure. I didn't watch a ton of Parks and Rec, but it's
like
a great board
like
game.
Parks and Rec.
I know, everybody says that, and I just need to find what network it's on and maybe go binge some episodes.
Yeah.
But it's one of our favorite things to do at like our till retreats. Jesse, Ryan, and I have been talking about doing like a YouTube podcast where we invite a fourth person to come play, and then we just talk marketing while we play Settlers of Catan. What do you think?
Brilliant idea. I love that.
Yeah. So
I would have to learn how to play first.
That's right. It'd be more fun if you were learning as you as you went.
It would.
Right. Well, I'm going to put you on the list for when we do that.
Good deal.
So I'd reached out. It's been way too long. And when I reached out to see if you'd come back on the podcast, which you graciously have, and I really appreciate, I kid you not, 24 hours later, my sister texted me and was like, I love Ashlyn Carter. I have no use for any of her like Instagram or YouTube. Like she's not a copywriter by trade, right?
Yeah.
But she's like, I love all the content that she produces. And I'm
Davey,
this is so random.
The world. I so appreciate that.
Yeah. And I thought, I was like, this is so random. I was like, did Krista tell you that she's coming back on the podcast in a few weeks? She's like, no. She was just watching whatever and texted me since, you know, she knew you'd been on the podcast before.
Did she follow the entrepreneurial world?
Yeah, she follows the entrepreneur work and she is in marketing. So, you know, when she says she has like no use for those, what she means is that she's not like specifically a copywriter, although I'm sure she utilizes what she learns and all that. I just thought that was so funny. So I had to share that.
Yeah, that's going to like be I'm going to ride on that for a week. Thank you so much.
So she was really excited to hear that you're coming back on the podcast. And we have so much to talk about because we haven't really talked we haven't connected for the last few years. You know, we're coming up on 2023 and I'm excited to hear like what you think about what's coming up. But before we get there, what's been going on? What's been the latest?
Okay. It's been, I think like 2021 was my hardest year in business. And then I think 2022 was like, hold my beer. it's been a good year, but it's been a year of team building and culture more so than I thought it was going to be. I don't know if you guys saw this, but like 2020 was an incredible financial year for us. And then now I feel like now we're dealing with the repercussions of the Great Resignation and the quiet quitting movement and more people moving into this small business world. So yeah, we've just seen there's been a lot that we've been figuring out and trying. And it's been overall so good. God is so good. Like I have such an incredible team assembled. I'm embarrassed to say I got through how many years of business? 6.5 years of business as the only full-time employee. And that was not the smartest decision. So I'm
so
glad that
though.
There's two other people now. besides just me.
Yeah. What do you feel like made 2021 especially hard? I resonate with that for sure.
First of all, it's hard to, I've talked about this with some other peers too. Once you hit a financial goal, it's really hard to make less than that on another year and not feel like that's a failure, because it's certainly not. I took about half the year off to, as experienced as us, we're two and two with kids and what that impact is on a business owner. And so that was probably the hardest part about 2021 was just, and I took it offline, and then I came back in social media, and I felt like that meme of that guy who's like, hello, youths or whatever, like fellow kids with a skateboard. Like, what in the world? Social media is so different now. That learning curve and feeling like after you've been in the industry, again, you probably know these feelings too for so long, and now there's all these new people. You're like, shoot, do I still have it? I don't know. How do I need to pivot? What do I need to, because you're also doing a lot more work now. You have more of a name and a brand. So you've got the client work coming in, whereas the people that maybe don't have as much have the luxury to, they can be more visible, because that's what they've, you know, they're playing the card they've got to play. And so all that mindset stuff going on between your ears. And I think that was what 2021 was for me. So by the end of the year, I was like, I made some decisions about what 2022 would be like. And yeah, one of the big ones, like, I've got to get some help. I am not, amongst other things.
I want to hear more about some of the team building stuff too. I found that 2021 was just the worst. And I'm still sort of reflecting on what the damage done in 2021. You know, I think for me, it was just a season of burnout.
Yeah.
Just not feeling as motivated. I think because 2020, and I've talked a little bit about this on the podcast, but it felt like it should be a sprint, you know, like with 2020, it was like, I had no idea what was going to happen. So it was just like, put your head down and work. And then I think mentally, I thought someone was going to ring the bell and be like, okay, you know, whatever this is that we're dealing with right now is over and everybody can rest, but that never happened, right? So it's just like, I think I brought that mindset into 2021, and somewhere along the way just, you know, got burnt out. And then, just thinking about last year and the way that the ways that impacted work. And I feel like now in 2022, this year has been fun, because especially as the year goes on, I'm feeling more motivated again, more excited about the work that I'm doing. But it was it was a hard year.
I am so grateful. You, first of all, your classic Davy Lates, you so well said. Vanessa, I don't know if you follow Vanessa Lau, and I know Elise Dharma is a friend, but like, they have very large internet businesses, and they both have like publicly talked about burnout, and theirs happened in the same time frame. So I know that you're right. It was kind of the ring the bell is a great metaphor, because I think we were all like, the sprint got exhausting. We had to kind of reset, like, okay, no, this is it now. So how am I going to deal?
Yeah. So you started building a team. What's been exciting about that? What's been hard?
I needed an executive assistant, which sounded like the bougiest. I was screwing up my calendar constantly, not getting back to emails, and I know y'all did an episode recently on productivity but even with like all those things in place, I was still messing up. So that was like one thing I realized, like, I need somebody to crack a whip on me. And I had an integrator, Rachel, for years. She's my college roommate, and it was such a great relationship. And I'm so excited for her. She's having her third baby and was going to homeschool full time. So with her moving out, that's kind of when I was like, all right, I've got to rebuild here a little bit. That's when I, like I mentioned earlier, cannot be the only full-time anymore. I need more boots on the ground here. And then did some reshuffling. So now it sounds so clinical, but like, we have like departments now that I guess like seeing grooves and lanes in the business where it was like an assembly of contractors for a long time. And that worked for, 6 years, but now we need department meetings, and we need not just a full team meeting, but those departments have to come together as well and have discussions, so we don't take up time in the full meeting. So all that kind of stuff has been really interesting to learn. And it's also been challenging to realize that I have like sticky notes everywhere. My Queen Bee role, what is that book? Is that a Clockwork? Mike Michalowicz, I think is his name. I always say Mike Wazowski, not Mike Wazowski from Monsters, Inc., but Clockwork, where he talks about the queen bee role of the business. And I know if I am not in Google Docs or talking to people, we're like not making money. That's kind of the two things that literally only I can do is like write our stuff. That's the other point I was going to make is I've learned a lot this year about the value of, and it's interesting in this post-COVID world, like being in the room and talking to people and building relationships. I don't know, like I just have never really been comfortable with that side of business or seen myself in that, but I'm learning when I go to something or show up on a call with other entrepreneurs and I make a relationship, like that does behoove the business. I'm trying to get more comfortable with that as the year goes on.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Yeah, that's another thing that I think initially I was grateful for more time at home and less travel, and that felt good. But then again, that's one of those things where I feel like I've always been a relationship builder. And so I think we're getting back to like some of our first travel actually in a few weeks. You're heading out to Showitz conference, and I'm really excited for that and to be back in a place where I can like meet people and,
yes,
you know, hang out. And I do think those help move a business forward on so many levels. I mean, it might just be internally where, you know, you're meeting another like-minded entrepreneur and they speak something into your business or your life that makes mm-hmm. a big change. Or it might just be a relationship that it's a high for now, but 6 months from now, it becomes a client. So I'm really excited to get back to some more travel and in-person stuff with people. And
nothing like it.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. So we have a high school intern for the first time. She is very interested in copywriting. And she's actually, I'm shocked at how quickly she's picked things up. But I have to ask, what are a few things you would tell her if, you know, if you were speaking to yourself back at her age, what would you tell her to focus on?
So good. There's such wisdom and value in like the, for lack of a better way to say it, the old dead guys, like the old copywriters, Bill Bly, Ogilvy, some of these books that I don't think I picked up and started reading really until about I started my business. And I'd been writing copy, marketing copy for years before that. And I read a few of the classics in like my corporate years, but that's something that, I mean, even given the landscape and iOS changes and how that's impacting like direct response, ad copy and all that, even within the confines of that, the psychology and the persuasion techniques, if she can get those ingrained in her psyche of like how she writes and how she approaches writing, that is just invaluable. It's an old tool, but it's a tool for a reason, but rewriting old sales letters and finding old classic sales letters and just like making that like a ballerina, like getting the technique so ingrained that you can then riff on it because you know, that's what I would tell myself to do again. Because I didn't start doing that until I started my business and I got more hungry about, I was hungry about work, but I didn't do professional development beyond much that was like new and flashy when I was in corporate. Like I wanted to learn, you know, hot new techniques and stuff, but there's just a lot of value in the old stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to reach out and get a list of some of these classics.
I would love to share. Yeah.
Yeah. And that would be awesome. And I'll post those in the show notes once I get them, but I'll also, I'm going to for sure share those with our intern.
And even for people like listening now that are a little more seasoned, like I still, and I want to get back into it. I'll go through seasons where every day for a month, I'll start my work day by like reading an old sales letter or looking at an old ad and just thinking like, what does that have in it that worked? Or is there, does that spur an idea in me? I at least haven't found that to be a sustainable thing I can do for like years. That would be awesome if I could do every day like that. But it's a good little sprint to do for a month or a few weeks to brush up those skills.
So, you know, sort of a random aside question from there. I've related. If you were to go back in time, restart your business, what are some of the things that you do differently, you think?
That's always such a hard question because the journey that made me who I am, you know how it is. You mess up and that's the thing that, I mean, I'll tell you, like I was very slow to chop off calligraphy from my business because I constantly told myself that people wouldn't trust me if I hadn't proven to them that I knew what it was like to sell in their market and I knew what it was like to sell a nice to have or beauty or artistry. So I just didn't chop it off. I don't think we have that luxury as much anymore because given that there's such a groundswell and like you see the Clarion messages that like cut through the noise are specific. Mm-hmm. They are, I'm not even going to bring up the whole conversation of niching because everybody has opinions on that. But regardless of where you fall about niching, that it's got to be laser sharp of a message to get through. There is so much. We just came off a launch. There's so much noise out there right now. That's the only way you're going to be able to stay in. And I feel like that's only going to be in 2023 too. So I think I got away with maybe a muddled message, or I was just afraid to kind of like go all in on something. And you have to throw, there's a certain amount of like throwing spaghetti at the wall before you're like, okay, that hits. Like that's what it needs to be. I was just afraid.
Yeah. I think that's interesting though, because I think we all sort of, I think it's easy to come up with ideas and then add them, you know, and it's always harder to chop things off and get more specific and double down on, you know, certain things. I think in current businesses too, like, that's something that we're currently going through, you know, figuring out what is it that we really do well and how is it that we best serve people and then really starting to focus there. But then there's always that concern. It's like, well, you know, but what if someone wants this? Like we can do that too. So that is
a constant struggle.
That is tough. I feel like for me, it definitely goes back to team building. You know, I'd build a team much sooner than we did. It makes such a big difference.
It does make a big difference. That's, and that's a sign of like, building a business that you don't, when you love your craft, you just don't even think about. I feel like I've got, there's two names that come to mind of like people I know in this whole world that like, they're just such artisans of their craft and in love with it so much. And I get that. And it's hard for those of us that function like that. There's a lot in this bubble to be like, oh yeah. And I need to like shake hands and be in the room and rub elbows. Like that's part of it. But
yeah, for sure. What have you been doing differently this year? What do you feel like coming out of 2021? You know, I know you mentioned 2022 has been a year of team building and culture building. How much of that do you think is like a result of what we all just went through collectively? Yep. And how much of it is just kind of the natural evolution of your business?
Okay. So there's two big projects that we worked on this year. One is we built our own email server, which was a bear of a project, but we saw the fruit of all that labor this past launch. So what that involved, and I love tools like ConvertKit, and I haven't really played around with Flowdesk a lot. I have questions about the deliverability on Flowdesk, but I love platforms like that. Mm-hmm. The problem is we got to a certain size because basically you're buying into it costs because you're buying into a shared server. And that server, ConvertKit servers or whatever, the way, and I'm no like data scientist, but this is my understanding of it. They are doing the best they can to get your email into as many inboxes as possible, right? The problem is at the end of the day, you don't own that IP. And so what we wanted to do is see, could we build our own server and warm up our own IP to a point that when we send emails, we have greater control over it. It requires far more babysitting of the server to make in like all the IP addresses and everything. But we saw open rates go up, and you know, it's like standard in most industries, 20%, 25%, 30%. We're regularly seeing 60% to 70% open rates. I think that made a big difference because we couldn't tell with our email list. It was, I think it was like, it got up one time. And that's the thing too. It got up to one time to 60,000. Oh my gosh. We cleaned off probably 20,000 bots were in there. Then, so it got back down to probably more like 25 to 30,000, but we could not tell so many. And we used Infusionsoft. I have thoughts on Infusionsoft mostly, blah. But that we couldn't tell what was getting in inboxes. And it was getting to the point where it's like, you're paying in ads, you're getting people on your list. You're like, if they're on this list, I have got to get to their inboxes. It's starting to cost us that we can't. And so we spent the first 6 months of the year moving over to our own server and warming that up. And so that has meant this year we're sending out, to keep our server warm, 2 weekly emails. That was a big change for me. That's a lot more. That's double the amount of like copywriting and content writing. And so that's been an adjustment and trying to figure that out. But we found like in my fear too, even though I say it to clients all the time, like you can send more emails. Don't worry about it. And then it came my turn. And I was like, oh gosh, everyone's going to unsubscribe when I start sending 2 times a week. But no, it's done so great. I think that is going to continue into 2023. Again, back to the noise thing. I feel like I sign up for brands all the time now and they're sending me 2-3 emails a week and I don't mind it. I think we're all used to a little bit more. Maybe our muscles have gotten a little bit stronger when it comes to the amount of messages that we can consume or amount of emails we're more comfortable with. But that's been like a big thing we worked on this year and what I see into next year. The second big thing is pulling down our course content and our curriculum to much more tighter, tangible bites. It's like the TikTok effect. You know how we all used to could watch 16-minute videos and then now we're like 30 seconds, get to the point.
I don't have time for anything more than 8 minutes.
Wait, say that again.
On YouTube, I have no, like, if it's more than 8 minutes, I'm like, I don't have time for this. And I'm still listening on double speed, you know?
What happened? Our little goldfish brain. But I do that too. Sometimes I'm watching a TikTok and they don't get to the point in the first like 10 seconds. I'm like, wow, that is brutal, Ashlyn. But I think when it comes to course curriculum, and you were in the industry 5 years ago, it used to be like 72 videos. Woohoo. Now everybody's like, heck no, techno. Yeah. I don't have time for that. So that's been a big thing is like looking at the curriculum that I have. And I've got 3 courses and then I've got templates too. And just like, how can we pull them even further down? Like, how can we get to the point faster? I pulled down Copywriting for Creatives as my signature curriculum. And I did that last year, ripped it down. And I'm doing the other 2 courses that I have this year to just like, we cannot have these long videos anymore. Cannot.
Yeah.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
I want to go back to sending the email. So you're sending 2 emails a week, in part for practical purposes, trying to keep that email server warm. The email server, is that, are you running like a dedicated server through ConvertKit, or is this your straight up your own?
Through Mailgun. Have you ever heard of them?
Yeah. So Mailgun, yeah. They're kind of like a SendGrid.
Yes. Yeah. So they house it all. And then like the skin over the top that we use is FG Funnels. After so many years, the tech bloat was so frustrating, not just financially, because you're paying for stuff and there's overlap. But from a conversion measurement standpoint, I was getting so frustrated that I couldn't track from like point of entry into our ecosystem or my world to like, did that person spend or not? That was driving me crazy. You know, I know a lot of people listening, like you have a lot of us have dual sides. Like you've got your service provider side, and then you probably do have like digital products or templates or shop items. I just got really frustrated that I couldn't track everything. And so FG Funnels is newer and it kind of felt like a risk. It still kind of does sometimes, but I know some of the people behind it and we've had a good experience so far, but man, just being able to, we did this past launch and be able to pull such greater metrics. That's where I find peace of mind because it launches in marketing in general, so emotional. And when I can look at the numbers and see the story that the numbers tell, I stress out far less.
Yeah.
So it's been a heck of a move, but I'm glad we've done it.
So real quick, just because you had mentioned you have opinions about it. And so before we jump into a few other things here, you had mentioned ConvertKit, Flowdesk, Infusionsoft. Now you're using Mailgun / FG Funnels. Do you have opinions about the other three real quick?
Yeah, I am always so impressed with ConvertKit, their commitment to deliverability. And I want to look more into Flowdesk. I just do not. And that's the thing too, I learned through all of this. What your server sometimes is telling, what a ConvertKit or a Flowdesk is telling you is your deliverability is not always true. Mm. Definitely not. If anything, I mean, you see it in the nature of what you do. iOS updates completely ravaged and crushed our ability to know, like, is that a true open rate or was that, we don't know.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times I've had some students and they're like, no, Flowdesk, like, it's telling me it's delivering. I'm like, you actually cannot trust that. Like, you theoretically, because it's so packed and so HTML saturated, statistically, it is going to be throttled by Yahoo, by some AOL. Like, they're just, that's the question I have about it. And I want to do like a whole deep dive into it and really figure it out. Cause I think for creatives, the creator economy, it's a beautiful product. Like,
yeah.
But we need to be able to, we've got to be able to get in inboxes.
Yeah. And that's the key, right? You know, it's because if it's not going to be your most profitable channel if you can't even get in the inbox. And that makes sense. We've talked about moving from ConvertKit, but we never
really
do. You know, this is something I've been saying for years now.
Yeah.
So we're probably sticking with ConvertKit. We do have a dedicated server ConvertKit. On ConvertKit, which is
awesome.
A step down from what you're doing.
But it's stepped up incredible. From
like just kind of server sharing, I guess. But yeah, that's so interesting. I haven't heard. I mean, I know people do that, but I haven't. We'll have to talk more about that.
We
your
could
experience
totally
there.
Nerd out about that.
Oh, that would be great. So let's get back to a little bit of copywriting and how that's changed over the last few years. You talked a little bit about TikTok, the impact that's had on our ability to maybe consume longer form content like YouTube and things like that. And probably why YouTube has rolled out things like YouTube Shorts, right?
Yep.
There's something about that short form content that just keeps on going on and on and on. Mm-hmm. So has copywriting changed in similar ways?
Absolutely. Like, we have AI now. We did not have that a couple of years ago and it has exploded. In writing circles, you definitely have that fear because I have the fear too. And so whenever I get nervous about something, my knee-jerk reaction is like, must research everything about it. And so that's what I did when I kind of got nervous, like, oh, the robots are coming for our jobs. And what I've landed on, like my hypothesis is it is such a great tool for rejigging ideas in your head and getting you maybe out of a block, helping. I think headlines, they're usually pretty good. Everything though, and I say this, like I really like some of these platforms. I can't help but think that they sound a little word salad-y though, what it spits out. Also, there's, if you're talking brand voice and personality, they got nothing on you
at
anybody. Yeah, like that's, but it is, it's just an interesting tool. Like there's product description generators and like, I think they expedite the writing process if you've got a lot of writing, but that'll be interesting to see. Does it get smarter over the next few years? I don't know. And I don't think we've had a lot of maybe creatives really latch into all that yet, but like maybe that could happen next year too. We'll see.
Yeah. I generally think that AI is just a terrible idea in general, but Philip, philosophy aside,
that,
You know, something interesting just in the last few months, you know, so Google's rolled out with the Google helpful content update, and then they rolled out with a spam update shortly after that. And the kinds of content that has been hit by that is AI content, you know, and so
just based on a little bit of research. Say more about that. That's so interesting.
Yeah. So basically there's this one guy I follow, Neil Patel, just sent out an email about this, but since he sees data across so many different sites because he also owns Ubersuggest. But it looked like, you know, and again, I just skimmed it, but it looked like the bottom line was, you know, if you had content on your site that was purely AI generated and posted, that content seemed to be most impacted by these different updates. And it makes sense too, you know, like to your point about brand voice and things like that. And I just can't imagine that the most helpful content in most cases is going to be content created by a machine, you know?
Preach.
I think there's people who have really mastered the process of starting with AI and then basically taking that and building on it to get it to where it needs to be. So I think maybe there's promise there, but yeah,
I'm with you.
I'm on team human, so.
Same. Team human. I mean, the creativity and the artisanship and like the storytelling, like you, that's why I get so excited when creatives figure out how to write that, because I'm like, you can learn this. Like, it's totally a learnable skill. And a bot will never be able to replace you on this. Like,
Well, it's interesting. Google does seem to be actively trying to fight completely AI bot created content, which I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. But what else has changed? Anything else, like in terms of the sort of type of content you're writing or you're creating, or, you know, maybe has it magnified the importance of certain things? Like, I imagine headlines are that much more important.
That's good. That was not on my list, but I would say yes. What was on my list kind of related to that is hooks. Like, the hook has to be, again, the noise out there, it's got to be sticky. Neat little thing you could do is scroll through. I keep mentioning TikTok. It's just like fascinating to see in real time stuff go down. So if you scroll through TikTok enough to start getting some ads, see how, and especially when you get retargeted the same ads for the same product, but they're pitching different hooks to you to see what's going to snag your attention first. That is what is fascinating. And I think for those of us in the creative sphere, especially those of us who've been offering something for a long time, one thing that I'm seeing with our clients, and one thing that really scared me this launch, it was our 11th launch of Copywriting for Creatives, is offer fatigue. I think that is very prevalent, and you've got to figure out a way, whether it's a new hook when you're coming in with the angle of what's going on in the world, or like just thinking outside of the box, I think is very important. You've got to nail that. Offer fatigue is real. I've seen it with so many clients.
Yeah. How do you prevent, what are some of your tips for preventing offer fatigue, especially around emotional hooks? One of the gals on your team too, she had mentioned this concept of lawyering up that maybe you could talk about as well.
Oh my gosh. I love talking about that. Okay. So one thing that we did to combat that this launch this time around is like change up the, I call it a hype piece, but whatever tool you're using to pitch your offer, your fall mini sessions, your like whatever the thing is you're trying to sell, how are you telling people, hello, this is open for business, whether it's a webinar, a workshop, masterclass, challenge, all those kind of things. So we did a completely different challenge this time around. And we also, like, one thing I was like, let's just try it. We'll either be judged into the oblivion or it'll work, is get real themey with it, like tongue in cheek. We did like a homecoming theme. Like, I even did a shoot with Abby Grace Springman. She takes photos for us. We did it on, I was up there anyway, but we were next to Yale's campus. And so she was like, order pom-poms. And like, we just went all in. It was very well received. But again, I think it cut through the noise and it stood out. So I think if you feel like you have something you've pitched over and over and over and over again, can you come at it with a completely creative, maybe tongue in cheek, like, go for it. Just see if that alone shakes it up a little bit, because it might. And just, you're trying, it's just that attention span is so short. So how can you get in on that? The lawyering up concept, hopefully it's starting to like crystallize for people. Sometimes I feel like I talk about it so much, but I'm just so passionate that your art doesn't sell itself. And a lot of, again, creatives, artists, makers, those of us who love the aesthetic side of things are afraid to like use data and proof and argue for the value of what they do. Because as I guess we think like it's art, it's like people are only buying from emotional reasons. Yes, but they're like, you've got a lot of logical buyers out there. Like a lot, I am a very lot. I have to remind myself sometimes to like bring emotion into my copy because I love, just because you like to buy one way doesn't mean other people don't. So yeah, I love helping people figure out how to use data and proof points. You need to have a proof point to back up any claim that you're making in your writing, even if you're creative.
Yeah.
So I would say, especially if you're a creative, actually.
Yeah. And I think that's so important. I think it's so easy to project, this is how I purchase, or this is how I think through something.
Yes.
And so this is how everybody thinks through it.
Yes.
We were working on copy with it was actually for a firm that offers accounting continuing education. So I'm thinking back to my days as like an educator, where we had to do, you know, high school teacher, we had to do CPE to keep our certifications and all that. And all the angles that I'm coming up with are like, well, you know, when I was doing it, I was trying to find the class that was easiest, quickest. Could it be done virtually? Could I just take the test, you know?
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
But I was talking to a friend of mine who he works for one of the big four accounting firms. And he was like, yeah, you know, there's definitely accountants like that are looking just to check the box. But he's like, you know, there are a lot of accountants that they want to be on the cutting edge of their industry. They want to be the go-to person for specific subjects within their firm, you know? So it's not just about like, can you check this box? And so it was a good reminder for me, like, okay, I need to go back and I need to take a look at some of the other different angles that somebody might be approaching this decision from. But it's so easy to fall into that. Well, you know, I just want to check the box. Right.
Yeah. So. And I love that you said, because I saw that in my own launch. Like my own team was like, Ashlyn, hit emotion again, like in Instagram stories or whatever. Like you're getting a little too analytical, and getting your own humble pie served back to you is so good.
Yes, I find it happens to me so often. Oh,
and daily, I think, over here.
All right. Well, you know, one of the things that I want to ask about is headlines. And I want to end by talking about any hot takes you have for 2023 for sure.
Okay.
But one of the things that I think really has made a big difference for us is paying more attention to our headlines. And I think it's one of those things where you just kind of get into the groove of, you know, this is good enough or whatnot.
Yep.
But it really can make a big difference on so many different levels. If you're writing ad copy, the click-through rate on the ad, or somebody at least just stopping and getting that impression for a landing page, getting people to continue reading through and potentially signing up for whatever it is that you're offering on that landing page. Emails, we've already talked about. So maybe you could talk us through some of your best tips for writing headlines.
Yep. Okay. So my first tip is do not write it first. Do not write it first. If anything, it's the last piece that I write, because you've got to figure out when you're in the writing process of something, what's going to bubble up to be the best lawyer for the argument. That's always how it is. It's like, what is stickiest in everything I'm writing? What is the most irresistible thing? So I can't find that until I've written eons. Then the second tip is don't be afraid to borrow from other areas. Like I see this with students inside copywriting for creatives a lot. They'll have a great, and I think it's because they get more used to writing, they'll have a great line like down on the homepage or over on their about page or on their services page. I'm like, that's the hero of the entire sales argument. Let's pull that over. We can trade those out real easy. So I think be open. I would say to anybody who's listening, be open to like finding your hero headline wherever it may be hiding out, and be open to moving it. Cause I think otherwise you miss out. We get really married to like our ideas, and don't be afraid to move it. The last tip I have, and it's my team and I still do it. I have in my shop, and Copywriting for Creative Students have it, 35 headline templates. And I use those too. I have a friend, his name is Justin Blackman. He's a copywriter. And I think it was he made himself write 100 headlines for 100 days. And like, just to get better. And I asked him one time, I was like, Justin, how was it? Like, should I do that? And he was like, absolutely not. It was awful. But he got better. And I'm using that as a like broad example to even those like 35 headline templates. I know our agency girls, when they're writing drafts, they'll pull that out and they'll just write 35 different versions. It's like a muscle, and you find in there the key. So I mentioned these three tips because I think not a thing. I know headlines are the hardest. So don't put so much pressure on yourself to just whip one out at the beginning of your writing project. That is literally the worst time to write one, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's funny you say that because what I find, so typically when we're writing ad copy, I'll come up with headlines and I put it in quotations because it'll help me sort of brainstorm different angles or maybe different hooks. So it's not really like, oh, I'm sold on these headlines yet. And then without fail, as I actually write the copy, you know, I go back and typically almost every one of those headlines is going to change because I'm going to write something finally. And it's going to be like, oh, that's a good line. How can we turn that into a headline? You know, one of the things that I remind our intern of a lot because I've struggled with it to this day, which is just that perfectionism where it's like, you can't go on to the next headline until you figure out the perfect headline for this. But there's something to be said about just writing down what comes to mind and maybe writing 35 or 100, you know, whatever. I typically don't even get to 35. We do lists of like 20.
Yeah. 35 is a struggle to get to. Yeah. Like usually I'm like 5 or 10, even if I'm writing like subject lines for an email, I'll do like 5, but it's like the good stuff really comes if you can just sit with it for another 5 minutes and see what happens.
Yeah. And try not to think about it too much, you know, because and Seth Godin has said this before, which is you have to write so many bad words before you get to the good word, you know, and that's been, I think, very formative for me, certainly over the last few years. I think with kids, I don't know if you found this, you're just forced to adopt that mindset because you just kind of got to keep pushing forward. But yeah, that is really helpful. Well, as we turn our attention to 2023, what do you think's coming? Like what? So 2021, 2022 have been challenging years. Yeah. What do you think's coming in 2023?
Okay. Did you see, I posted a little bit about it and it got good feedback, but I posted about the lipstick index. Have you heard of that?
Yes. Well, okay. I hadn't heard about it until you posted about it.
Yes. That is one thing I'm like, and I talked to a ton of peers and my coach and like other people I knew that were launching. And a lot of us that were launching around the same time saw that like for like a high ticket offer in our industry is just, it's asking for a mortgage payment right now. And that is a tough sell. So how can you, especially, you know, if, and it looks like we are in recession and that continues into next year, how can you still get people little quick wins, but you have to die to your darlings a little bit that maybe your signature big high ticket offer or year long mastermind coaching program or whatever it is may not be the fit right now. And so, and that would be great, but like, how can you then give them little moments of, and when I was reading, like researching before I wrote that post and reading these articles, I was like, oh my gosh, this is me. Like I buy like this. I'll be at the grocery store doing something. I'm like, I'm just going to get a little nail polish for myself. You know, like that, I do that. So how can you give your audience ways to do that? And even if you're a service provider, like I was talking about this with some students and I had some service providers pipe up and like, oh my goodness, you know, who's doing a killer job at it? Angela at Saffron Avenue. She does these brand drops where she will make like 4 pre-made brands and then she only sells like 4 versions of each and she'll drop them with a wait list. And you buy, basically, it's like a mini, it's kind of a day rate. A day rate is a great example of, I think, like a lipstick offer. Mm-hmm. It's an opportunity to have her work on your brand. You get your results in a week and it's like under $2,000. And I know but in comparison to like a $10,000 brand refresh, like that is a great offer. So I think figuring out like, can you have day rate, strategy hours, VIP sessions, template packs, all that kind of stuff and price them competitively so your audience can have little moments of getting that dopamine hit from you.
Yeah. Well, we'll link to it in the show notes to your post about the lipstick effect, but you could tell people were interested in it because—
it was interesting.
Lots of engagement. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's an interesting take for 2023. Any other hot takes?
It'll be interesting also to see because, again, I've talked to a few friends about this. We saw with this past launch, there is course fatigue out there and people have invested in things that have not worked. And so how is that all the better to you than if you've got a course or a product that does work. But I think because now we've had this backlog of people that things for the past few years, if they didn't get results, you've got to battle that in your messaging and in your sales process. We saw that head on this time around. So that'll be interesting to watch too.
And there's just so many, you know, making a course now is easier than ever. Selling stuff online. Webinars aren't, I mean, there's a million different platforms to do webinars.
Yes.
You know, back in the day, it was like such an investment just to get into making a course online. That's interesting. I'm interested to see. Yeah, I just think that creating content, creating like helpful content is more important than ever. And it's
awesome.
I think the people that
I want to hear more. Yeah, like what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think like because there's so many different tools and platforms out there that there's a lot of people that are getting, they're mistaking the platform for the content, if that makes sense. You know, so it's like, oh, I'm on this platform and I'm gonna get really good at this platform in the sense of like I know when to post and maybe how it works. Oh. But it's like if you can't create content that people are interested in, then it doesn't really matter.
Yep.
This is something that I think has been true. It's not really a hot take because I think it's been true for a long time. But I think it's like just because there is so much out there right now that it's even more of a distraction for people.
Yep.
I feel that like I'm not on TikTok. Krista's on TikTok, as you know. I probably should be on TikTok, but I just can't get myself to do it.
No, I use it probably for reasons I shouldn't. I don't get on other platforms because I only get on that one because it makes me laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
And like the other ones feel so serious and businessy. And I'm like, I just want to giggle for like 30 minutes.
And it's funny because my sister, who we talked about at the beginning of this episode, she will send me, she'll send the family group text videos almost every day from TikTok. And they're always hilarious. I always think I should get on this, but
it really, it's when I just need a break to laugh. So it's
but I think that goes back to the point around content, right? Facebook, I mean, I think we all have Facebook accounts because like maybe we run ads on Instagram.
I was about to say because our ads are tied to it.
Exactly. There's just so much that's like kind of tied to it. It's like email, but not as good as email, right?
Oh my gosh, yes.
So,
yes.
And then Instagram, like to a certain extent, you know, feeling a little bit dry over there in a lot of the same ways, but maybe it's not quite as bad. So, but again, like why do people go to TikTok? All the reasons you just mentioned, you know, it's like the type of content and it's lighthearted and just user-generated content becomes that much more important for brands.
Yes, it's not polished. It's
yeah. And how can you encourage as a brand people to create user-generated content around your brand? It will be interesting. Maybe you've convinced me to finally sign up for TikTok.
At least for the giggles.
I don't love the whole privacy. You know, all the privacy concerns around it. That's one of the big things for me. But
I went through a phase. I probably downloaded it for a few days, deleted it maybe 3 or 4 times before I was like, okay, I'll just turn my VPN on. And
exactly. And with that said, like I have an Alexa in my house. So, you know, I feel like there's so much
your
like
soul's cognitive already sold.
Yeah, exactly. It's like there's no consistency
no secrets.
There. Right. Yeah. Well, Ashlyn, I don't want to take up any more of your time. Thank you so much for joining us again on the podcast. It's been way too long. I feel like we used to see pre-COVID, we saw each other yearly. At least
every 6 months.
Yeah. You know, it was like relatively frequently. So hopefully that starts happening again as conferences start
happening.
I miss you guys. Although I feel like conferences have hit hard times as well.
Yeah. We'll have to get them to pick up again.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you so much. And really appreciate your time.
Awesome. Thanks, Davey.
Thanks for tuning in to the Brands That Book Show. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing and leaving a review in iTunes. For show notes and other resources, head on over to davyandkrista.com.